Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, creating finished basements for family fun, fitness, and entertaining. Ideas at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. It's the beginning of October and still very warm outside, but soon enough, I hope, we'll be feeling and seeing autumn outside. And that means gardens, parks, and everywhere there are plants. So today, we're talking about fall flora. To do that, we have two guests. Daria McKelvey is back. She's the supervisor of home gardening information and outreach at Missouri Botanical Garden. Great to see you, Daria.
Thanks for having me.
Also in studio is Eliza Pesero, field specialist in horticulture at University of Missouri Extension's St. Louis County office. Eliza, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
We also want to hear from you. How has your garden been doing this year? What have you learned, or what might you do differently next year? Share your failures and successes with us. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send an email to talk@stlpr.org. So fall gardens bring beautiful oranges and yellows and purples to this region. What are some native fall plants, Daria, that are currently in bloom?
There's a couple. Right now, the solidago or goldenrod is looking really nice. And another one of my favorites is the New England aster, or fall blooming aster. It's full of purple flowers and just pollinators are all over it right now.
Mm-hmm. And are we seeing those everywhere in the region?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of gardeners, but you can probably go to more some native areas and you'll see them as well.
Mm-hmm. Are there any that have caught your eye, Eliza?
I was actually going to say those same two. And mm-hmm. I think specifically, I love looking at the goldenrod because there's a lot of goldenrod soldier beetles that you'll see all over those.
Soldier beetles? Mm-hmm. What do those look like?
So they actually look a little bit like a lightning bug, which is also a beetle. They have a similar body shape and similar coloring. So they're black. And then, I wish I had a picture in front of me. They have a small yellow spot in the lower part of the wing.
Mm-hmm. And those are not harmful insects?
No, not at all. They're native and they're just feeding on the nectar and the pollen on the flowers.
Mm-hmm. So for next year, when is the best time to begin planning for these autumn plant species that we're seeing, Daria?
Right now. If you are seeing something right now that you like, go ahead and start thinking about where you would want to put that in your yard and what it's going to take to get it to where you want to see it next mm-hmm. fall.
What are some of the basics to keep in mind around that?
I would say definitely for find a place. We always say right plant, right place. Think about the sizing, because when you get that plant, it's going to be a cute little baby plant, but it's going to grow and fill in. So you're going to want to make sure you have the right conditions for that plant to thrive.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the common mistakes people make with these kinds of plants?
Definitely just not planting where they should, or not taking the time to plan ahead of time. Usually, I think a lot of gardeners are impulsive. I do that too.
Yeah.
And we don't really think about, okay, what is this really going to take? So doing your homework beforehand is really important to having a successful garden.
Mm-hmm. So not planting where they should. Are there areas in particular people should avoid doing this planting?
Not necessarily. It depends on, you have to know your yard. So if you have a spot that gets, is pretty dry, you don't want to stick something that likes to have wet feet. It's just not going to thrive. So finding something that's adaptable to those spots in your garden is going to be the best advice.
Mm-hmm. In terms of insects, what kinds of insects do help when it comes to planting these autumn plants? What is it that we should be looking out for, Eliza?
Yeah, so really any flowering plant, like the ones we had mentioned before, is mm-hmm. going to be beneficial to insects, since a lot of insects are eating pollen and nectar. Fall is a time of year when there are very few other floral resources out there. So anything that is blooming right now is going to be really important for insects. In particular, that New England fall blooming aster that Daria mentioned, mm-hmm. That is really attractive to bumblebees because they really like those purple colors on flowers.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about the longer warm season that has affected insects in particular?
That's a good question. it is something that happens, I think, over time. We are seeing that a lot of species that used to live further south are migrating northward. So they're expanding their ranges, and this is in particular for bumblebees. But then for some species that already lived farther north, just in the U.S. in general, their range is actually contracting. So while this can be beneficial, this longer warm season for our warm season bumblebees, our bumblebees that prefer a cooler temperature are actually going to be more impacted negatively.
Before we started the show, we were talking about some edible things for harvest. Before we get to that particular thing, how is it that we can tell when it is time to harvest fall vegetables? Daria?
Just when it's, you know, pretty much ready, like knowing your crop ahead of time, how long it needs to persist. And for most of our cool season vegetables that are growing right now, you can, you know, harvest them all the way up until the first frost. And even if you protect some of them, like with a frost cloth, you may actually get to harvest some plants even into November. So It just depends on the crop itself.
How are things looking in comparison to last year?
I think it's about the same last year. As last year, we were still kind of dry around this time. So we're still seeing some plants that are, you know, struggling a little bit with after coming off of a heat wave and also the lack of water, too.
Mm-hmm. So then harvesting pumpkins and gourds, mm-hmm. you know, cabbage, when do we start picking those? Like, when is the ideal time to do that, Eliza?
Yeah. So it's not necessarily a particular time of fall, but really just once you see that those plants are, that the fruit on the plant is turning the right color. So for a pumpkin, you definitely want it to be orange. Mm-hmm. And then other types of squash, butternut squash that have more of a kind of a creamy brown color, you want to make sure that they're reaching that correct color before you harvest them. And then you'll also want to keep the stem about 2 to 3 inches when you harvest them, because having a longer stem means that they will store for longer.
Oh, okay. So you can keep them before you use them mm-hmm. for a little while longer than that. Can you wait too long? Our producer, Emily Woodbury, found that picking our tomatoes, for example, just as they turned, you know, that they didn't have as many pests on them. Daria?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get the tomatoes off right as they're ripe, then that leads to less chances something else is going to come in. Mm-hmm. But I know that for tomatoes, especially since the season is ending, I would pick those really soon. They're starting to change their flavor a little bit. They're, mm-hmm. The days are getting shorter, so they're kind of shutting down. So okay. I would harvest as much as possible.
So when you say that the flavor is changing, mm-hmm. they're less sweet then?
It depends on the variety, but it's just not as tasty as I have some cherry tomatoes that I've picked and I left out for like one day, and already they were starting to get that little fermenty some taste to them, and I was just like, okay, I need to be more on top of this.
Okay.
So yeah.
And you were nodding, Eliza, about the tomatoes.
Yeah, so this is really the end of tomato harvest season. I know that a lot of folks in St. Louis didn't get a lot of ripe tomatoes this year. And I think it could be because folks didn't plant them as early as we need to now that things are warming up in the spring sooner. So now is definitely the time to get all of those tomatoes picked, because the longer you leave them on the plant, the more likely it is that stink bugs and other insects are going to go have a taste for themselves.
Okay. We heard from Erica, who had a question about seeds. Erica asks, where is the best place to find Missouri native seeds for wildflowers in bulk? So I'm going to toss to either one of you who wants to grab this one. Eliza, yeah.
Pure Air Natives is a local company in St. Louis, actually, and they have a really wide variety of native seed mixes. Mm-hmm. Depending on if you have like a lot of land out in the county, St. Louis County, or if you have a smaller yard and you want to do a pollinator garden, they have a ton of really great mixes for mm-hmm. different opportunities. Yeah.
Can you give the spelling of that source?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Pure Air Natives. It's P-U-R-E space A-R. A-I-R,
okay.
And then natives.
Okay, not H-E-I-R. I was thinking of heirlooms.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Yes,
pure okay.
air. Mm-hmm.
Great to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking earlier about persimmons. So those also are ready to be picked and eaten?
Not quite. Our native ones, usually a little bit later in the year, probably closer end of October and November. You want to wait until that persimmon gets a little on the mushy side. If you've ever picked one too early, you will know. Your mouth will be, it'll taste like chalk.
Oh, that's not pleasant.
No.
And Les, you said that there's a native persimmon here.
Yeah. So I think it really depends on where the tree is right now. I live near Tower Grove Park, and I walk by several persimmon trees every week. And there's one tree that just finished all of the fruit ripening. So if anyone lives by Tower Grove Park, go check it out. But then there's a couple trees just further down a little bit more in the shade, and they haven't all started ripening yet.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. We'd like you to join us too. How has your garden been doing this year? What have you learned, or what might you do differently next year? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send an email to talk@stlpr.org.
Support comes from the St. Louis Public Library Foundation. During these challenging times, free access to digital resources is a necessity. You can help our community stay connected. Support your St. Louis Public Library at slpl.org.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation about fall planting and plants with home gardening experts Eliza Passero, who's a field specialist in horticulture at University of Missouri's Extension's St. Louis County office, and Daria McKelvey, the supervisor of home gardening information and outreach at Missouri Botanical Garden. We also have Jim, who is calling from University City. Jim, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Elaine. Love your show.
Oh, great. We love that you've called. Go ahead.
So we just moved back from Cambodia. The garden's not in such great shape, and we want to make some big changes. We're thinking on the hillside behind the house, you know, maybe some native shrub type things, maybe witch hazel. Even pawpaw, coming back from the tropics, I love mangoes, and pawpaw seems to be about the closest thing we have to mango in Missouri. Can I get any established plants for transplanting anywhere? How long would it be before I could get some fruit? I mean, how do they do? Mm-hmm. What conditions, et cetera?
Yes, we have some nodding from from Daria over here. Daria.
Yes, you definitely can get those. I would talk to one of the local nurseries. Also, there's Missouri Wildflower Nursery that also sells throughout the state, and see what's available. You can also check out the Grow Native website, grownative.org. They have a wonderful calendar that lists all the native plant organizations and vendors that you can get things from. Those are some really good options. And I would say the persimmon, it might take several years before you get your first crop of fruit. But like I said earlier, I would just try to match the plants that you want for the site condition, and that will set you up for success.
Mm-hmm. Daria, do you have any questions for Jim about what he's looking at that might help give him some guidance?
The biggest question I would ask is, how much light does that slope have? Because that's going to impact what you can plant. If it's a very bright and sunny, you have a lot of options. But if there's other trees and more shade, then some of the other plants might, you know, it depends. It'll affect what you can grow.
Mm-hmm. Jim, does that help some?
It helps a lot. I appreciate it. I'll keep an eye on the winter sun. It's kind of shady during the summer. But, you know, we'll see how it works.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, welcome back to St. Louis from Cambodia.
Thanks. I listened to your show over there, and it was great. It was a great way to stay in touch. And by the way, my wife, Nancy, and I are longtime members, and and it's real important what you all do. So we strong supporters of STLPR.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And we want you to join our conversation as well. How has your garden fared this year? What questions do you have about the plants in your life, about the trees in your neighborhood? You can reach us by giving us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We also heard from Josie, who had this question. I would love suggestions or recommendations for fall-winter crops in our zone, crops that will help fix nitrogen, and other things we do or could do to enrich our soil over the winter. This is our first year of gardening. Eliza, do you have any responses for this?
Yeah, definitely. So if you want to be fixing nitrogen and really building up the soil health of your garden, I would recommend using cover crops, which you might be researching already. So cover crops are basically something that we plant that we don't intend to harvest, but it protects the soil from erosion and can add things like nitrogen back into the soil. So clovers and other legumes like winter pea are going to be really good cover crops that will add nitrogen to the soil because they have a really close relationship with nitrobes that fix nitrogen from the atmosphere and make it available to the plant. As we get later into the fall, cereal rye is a really winter hardy cover crop that you can plant till the end of October in this region, and it will overwinter and then start to grow in the spring, and then you can mow it or kind of crimp it down and then plant into it.
Mm-hmm. We also heard from someone who's curious about how the weather affects garden planning. Since it is warming up sooner than usual and staying warmer longer, how does that change when we plant and harvest? Should we go based on temperature or stick with the time of the year? Daria?
It's kind of both. I would, for the easy way to do it, time of year is important, but then I always look at the two-week outlook and the forecast to get in a sense of, will I be able to plant out, especially like in the springtime when you're trying to stick your tomatoes out. Look ahead to see what those temperatures are, and then that can help you gauge whether or not it's going to be a good time to plant or not.
Mm-hmm. Any follow-ups to that?
Yeah. So I know there's a couple organizations that have planting calendars. University of Missouri Extension has one that's specific to Missouri for all vegetable plants. And it tells you different varieties and then when to plant them based on the north, central, or southern region of Missouri. Right now, we're recommending that folks in St. Louis look at the central or south planting dates. So that vegetable planting calendar is available online, and you can pick which region you're in to find the best state to plant things.
And if I'm not mistaken, when we talked with you, Daria, in the past, we talked about the changes in zones and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was an update to the hardiness zones in our region in 2023, and normally the city was more like 6B and the county was more 6A. The map updated us to a 7 for the entire region. However, we always say we are moving into a true 7, yes, with climate change and everything, but right now we are still on that cusp of 6. So I would say if you're trying to plant something for hardiness, stick with 6 for now. Eventually, yeah, maybe down the road, we will likely be a true 7.
Mm-hmm. And did you also mention that number is sometimes marked on some seed packets and things like that?
Yes. Yeah. Whenever you're getting your plants on the tags, it should tell you the hardiness zone level. So as long as our zone 6 is between that range that they list on the tag, you should be good.
Okay. So what is it we should be planting now for the spring? Let's start with edible, like vegetable stuff, because lots of things are edible. You shouldn't necessarily eat them. Mm-hmm. What vegetables need to be planted now, Eliza?
Yeah, so we are really nearing the end of the period for planting things that will overwinter well. Garlic is the main crop that you can plant right now. So you would plant it, I would say get your garlic in the ground as soon as possible. And then garlic actually overwinters, and then it will grow next year in the growing season, and then you'll harvest it in July or August of next year. So make sure wherever you plant it, you're okay with that area being out of production for a bit of next year's season.
And you can just stick it in the ground?
Yes. So you can literally take a big old bulb of garlic and then break it up into cloves. Each of those cloves is a seed. And so you plant each clove a couple inches down into the soil, and it will act almost like a daffodil bulb, and then it will overwinter and grow next year.
Daria, is there anything we should consider about where we plant garlic?
Just as long as you, like Eliza said, you've got the space for it, and that corner is not going to be available until July. So you want to make sure that you think about where you're going to plant your other plants, especially even when you start getting into your summer crops.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to ornamental plants and grasses, what needs to be planted in the autumn, Daria, that can give a lot of spring color in particular to your garden?
Actually, right now, a lot of trees and shrubs, this is a really good time to start getting ready for that. The temperatures are dropping, and so they're going to be less stressed when you plant them. And so you can pick some plants that are going to have some nice color in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of trees, there's an annual debate about whether people should leave the leaves, you know, to rake or not to rake. If you do want to rake or have to do so, what's the best way to go about that, Eliza?
Yeah, so raking your leaves is totally fine. We recommend leaving leaves in your garden somewhere and not running them through like a lawnmower to shred them, because in the fall, our dead leaves on the ground is where a lot of our butterflies and moths are going to be overwintering. So as long as if you need to tidy up your garden and move leaves kind of to the base of a tree, or you can put a thin layer of leaves over your lawn, thin enough that it won't actually smother your lawn. You can even put leaf mulch onto your vegetable beds. As long as you're not actually breaking up those leaves themselves, you won't harm any of the insects inside, and you'll be able to tidy your garden and then continue to have habitat for those insects to emerge in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Do you eventually mow them, though? I mean, if you mow in the spring, is that going to deal a death blow to whatever is there?
Great question. So I would not mow them in the spring either, since it really depends on how warm of a spring we get. There are different times that all these different species are going to be emerging from the leaf litter. So I wouldn't mow anything in the spring either. Chances are, with the cold and wet of the winter, a lot of those leaves are going to kind of start to break down on their own. So you won't need to mow them at all in the mm-hmm. spring.
And is there tidying up that we should be doing, or just let it be?
For the leaves themselves, let it be. The leaves the leaves are already a perfect habitat for these butterfly and moth species. And there's probably already butterflies and moths in those leaves right now. So you don't need to do anything else.
Fireflies too?
Fireflies as well, yeah.
Yes, I think we've talked about fireflies on the show. Mm-hmm. So, and then grasses. Daria, should we give them a good trim into winter? Should I tell my mother-in-law that she can chill out on the mowing?
Yes, you can tell her that. Yeah, for ornamental grasses, please leave those up, because that's right now we're coming into their peak season, and they are gorgeous right now. And so we want to enjoy them. We also want to enjoy them in the winter. They provide habitat for all kinds of critters. And even when hopefully we get some snow, it'll have a, you know, winter interest as well. So typically we don't do our tidying up in a winter cutback until actually like almost February. Right just before the new growth comes on.
Mm-hmm. So we need to talk about foliage, because autumn is my favorite season, and that changing of the leaves is something I so look forward to. And some leaves are starting to turn, but not too many have transitioned from summer green just yet. Daria, what do you think we'll see this fall? Can we expect something spectacular, or do we need to sort of just cross our fingers?
At this point, unfortunately, I have to say, cross your fingers. I'm always hopeful, but because things can change. But given the fact that we've just, like I said, come off that heat wave, we have not gotten a significant amount of rain. Even with the couple amount we got 2 weeks ago, it's still not enough. And things are starting to drop early. And also, I looked at the 2 week forecast. We're not expected to get a whole lot of rain. So that's going to affect the persistence of fall, the leaves, they drop sooner, and also the coloration may not be as vibrant. The cool temperatures will help a little bit, so there is going to be some, but maybe that true spectacular that we've seen in the previous years, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, right. We'll have to look at our screensavers and things on our computers. Is this partly the effect of drought, there not having been enough water, Eliza?
Yeah, so this is probably the effect of drought. because there wasn't a lot of water this year. It's also just, I mean, this area is pretty warm into the fall. So a lot of when we expect to see fall foliage is just later here than it is in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. And does this then mean that trees will also, that they'll feel an effect next year?
Yeah, there is a chance, especially that you have to also think about not just this year, but the previous years we've had repeated drought. And so that adds up over time. And so some of the trees may show that later on in coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And another issue, too, I have seen is that there's been a couple of trees leafing out. They dropped their leaves, like a tulip tree dropped its leaves, and I've seen new leaves coming out.
Oh,
so it's using up the energy already stored for this year. Ahead of time, mm-hmm. which is not good.
Yeah. And where did you see that? Do you remember?
Forest Park. And I saw this also with a couple of them and also a magnolia or two.
Okay.
So I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a very quick break here. We'll pick up our conversation about all things fall gardening and plants in just a moment. And we want you to be part of that conversation. What are you planting this fall? Send us your garden and plant-related questions, and we'll pose them to our experts here. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Or you can send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. We also would love to see some of the photos maybe you have taken where there is better fall foliage, maybe not right in our region, but outside. And if you have been planting some things that are doing particularly well in a year that seems to have been rough for people who have been home gardening, let us see some of that too and share some of that bounty with our listeners.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. We're talking fall gardens and all things autumn plants today with home gardening experts Eliza Passero and Daria McKelvey. We're also hearing from you, like Andrew in Dogtown. Andrew, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so I live in an apartment, and this year I decided to do some natives in containers, about 2 foot wide, big pot containers out front. Right now my aster is blooming, it looks beautiful. The milkweed had bloomed a few weeks ago, and I was wondering, with perennial natives in container gardening, what kinds of things I can do as we head into fall and toward the winter to help out that soil in the pots to ensure that those plants come back beautifully and vibrantly next season,
mm-hmm.
if there's any kind of soil maintenance for fall that we need to be aware of in our garden.
Yeah. Eliza, you're nodding vigorously.
Yeah. First of all, I love that you are doing that. I think we need to encourage more native plants in containers for folks who might not have a yard that they can renovate in that way. So that's awesome. Right now is a good time to be putting down fertilizer so you can get a fertilizer mix that will work for those potted plants. I think as it gets colder this winter, you're also going to need to think about keeping the roots of those plants from freezing. So making sure that you have some type of insulation or something that you can put around your pots to keep the roots from freezing. And I'm saying this and realizing I need to do this for my own plants as well. Because since those pots are above the ground, they're going to be more exposed to freezing temperatures.
Mm-hmm. Are there any things about insects particular to homes that someone would need to be aware of if they are trying to raise some plants outdoors of an apartment?
Let's see. So I think it depends. Yeah, beneficial. I think having a lot of these native plants in containers, if you have enough sun for them to be flowering, that's going to provide a little bit of extra habitat for pollinators and other native insects on your balcony or stoop or wherever you have the containers. In terms of pests, it is always helpful kind of with any plants to be checking the plants definitely under the leaves. If it's something that you're trying to eat, if you're trying to grow like kale or bok choy out on your balcony the way I do, it's helpful to check underneath the leaves if you're seeing any damage, because oftentimes that's where pests are hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call, Andrew. Andrew, reach us at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We also have Marlene on the line from Brentwood. Marlene, welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
It's wonderful talking about native gardens, but I have two interesting story. One is about the New England aster, which I agree, it's totally beautiful, but it also becomes very aggressive. I had about a foot and a half area that it was in, and within 2 to 3 years, it was taking over my garden.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. So I'll share that. And then also an elderberry bush. And I had a friend that gifted me these natives, okay? So I did not check them out because this was a friend and I was ignorant enough not to ask questions. But one thing, the elderberry bush, which is great for birds and for you if you get the berries before the birds, but it sends out runners. Oh, my God. I had someone dig up, well, bush, it's more like a tree.
Oh.
Huge limbs and lots of berries. But anyway, I had somebody dig it up and put down leaf mulch and cardboard to help tame it, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Marlene, yes, thank you so much. I want to get a response actually here from Daria, because she has been nodding as she's listening to what you've had to say.
Yeah, especially like with the elderberry, like with the runners and things like that, it's going to be constant, you know, just constantly maintaining that, trying to dig them out as much as possible as soon as you see them. It's going to take a lot of elbow grease, yes, but that's the way that you can maintain that one. And yes, the fall blooming aster is notorious for spreading a little bit. So maybe sometimes with perennials, you can do a little cutback early in spring so that it can kind of control the size. And if you have to, you know, take off some of those sections to kind of you know, get it to a size that you're going to be able to work with.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like definitely getting some research in about what is going to be planted is
yes,
advisable. We have Kelly from Kirkwood who'd like to know if you have suggestions for how to keep squirrels out of garden tomatoes. Eliza, rolling your eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't had that issue with tomatoes, but what I generally do, I've tried a lot of different things with squirrels, and I do physical barriers over my plants. So I get chicken wire, and as long as you have some wire cutters, you can cut it to size and put it around your plants.
Mm-hmm.
That can be good. There are some repellents, and then there are kind of natural home remedies like cayenne or hot peppers or things like that that you can spray on your plants. That's not necessarily always going to work for every single squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
And they might over time be like, you know what, it's worth it for me to get a little bit of cayenne to get a tomato. So physical barriers are my number one go-to.
Okay. And our producer, Maya Norfleet, has actually used plastic forks facing outwards to ward off squirrels from for planters. It's like hostile architecture in the fauna sense. And I believe there has been a very fierce squirrel attacking people. So there's a little aside. Next time on St. Louis on the Air. We've also heard from Louise. And Louise asks, are there any perennials that can be planted this fall that honeybees like, but deer do not? Daria?
Ooh, that is a really good question. Taking this from the deer angle, unfortunately, there is no true deer-resistant plant. If they are hungry enough, they will eat it. However, like Eliza said, that the biggest thing is exclusion, using physical barriers to keep them off. So if you have new plantings, any fall plantings, putting cages and barriers around them. I mean, we even have to do that at the garden because the little rabbits love to nibble on everything. So mm-hmm. protecting those plants when they're young will help them to get established. And then as they get bigger, you hopefully can take them off, but just keep an eye on them.
Yeah. Mariana asks, I just received an order of tulips. I was going to plant them mid-November, but we may be moving. How long can I store them? And should I allow them at any time in the fridge? Daria?
Yeah, I would keep them in the fridge, actually, and keep them chilled until you can get to your site. And if you get to your new home and maybe by the November or something, you can't plant them, maybe try potting them up and mm-hmm. then sticking them out, you know, outside or something, and then having them. That way they're more mobile and you have a bit more flexibility with planting.
Mm-hmm. We had talked a little earlier about trees and what we were not going to be seeing, unfortunately, in terms of vibrant foliage as we have in years past, but something that many people across the region are seeing this year are woody growths on oak trees, and they look like, I think, little balls on the branches. What is going on here, Daria?
So what you're seeing is horned oak galls. They're very common on pin oak trees, which are throughout the region. And a gall is basically a structure that an insect actually induces the tree to create so that they can complete their life cycle. And that's one that we see on pin oaks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard comments that saying that, oh, that they're very prominent this year, of seeing more and more. And that might be the case. But keep in mind that it takes 2 years for those ones to form. So basically what we could be seeing is one series of galls. They're all maturing at the same time.
Oh.
And each of those little horns, the little protrusions, that's actually where a new wasp will emerge. So if you can imagine how sometimes those get really dense and really thick, yeah, that's what we're going to see.
Okay. That's mildly terrifying.
It's cool.
So trees are getting cut down because of this? I mean, is there any treatment available?
The trees that, like, a lot of people are hearing that their pin oaks are getting cut down, that's one aspect of the galls can have some effect, yes, but we also have to think about the environmental conditions. Pin oaks really don't belong up here. They like typically more acidic soil, where that's further south in Missouri. Also, they're in an urban condition, so they're kind of actually reaching their max age. So it's not just the galls that are causing this, it's a lot of different factors.
Yeah.
So that's what we're seeing.
So emerald ash borers have been a serious detriment. Is what we're talking about with these galls on the level of that insofar as threat goes, or?
No, I would say the emerald ash borer is much worse. They have taken out so many ash trees in our region, and I would say if you have an ash tree, you likely will have to treat for it, because if not, it will succumb to the borer, which essentially girdles the tree. Whereas the pin oaks and the horned oak galls, as long as the tree is healthy, those trees can survive still for a long time. So the emerald ash borer is not native to here. That is the one that is more problematic and is worth more looking into.
Mm-hmm. Eliza, what is going on with ash trees? You know, how are things looking now?
Yeah, things are looking okay with ash trees right now. We still do have folks come into our office asking about the emerald ash borer. The thing that we tell folks to look for is if you see a D-shaped hole in your tree, and it'll be like the bottom is flat and then the top is rounded, it'll be a hole of that shape. That's how you know that those emerald ash borer larvae have been boring. So that's one sign that the ash borer is already in your tree.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, really talking with your arborist is going to be the best way to figure out how to treat your tree if you need to do anything.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of arborists, Daria, I understand you are a certified arborist.
Yes, I am.
So with leaves, you know, about to fall from the trees, it's a good time to examine leaf shapes and identify the trees in your neighborhood. Do you have any recommendations on how best to identify what trees are around us? Like, are there tricks or tips here?
Oh, yeah. Even though trees are dropping their leaves, it's a great time for tree ID because, one, you can look at the leaves around the tree and see what those are. But also, as we're getting into winter, there is a such thing as winter ID. So looking at the bark, the pattern of the bark, the coloration, and also the buds. There's actually some definitely good guides. I think there's one even from MDC and other books that you can get. And so you can actually go out and identify trees based on those characteristics. characteristics even without the leaves. Mm-hmm. And you, the more you do it, the more you actually start recognizing those characteristics and can start identifying trees from afar.
Mm-hmm. MDC, Missouri Department of Conservation.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that we get to this part, which is plants indoors during the winter. What is it that we should definitely be doing, and what we should be avoiding in the last, we'll do a minute each.
Okay. Yeah. I think especially if you have plants outside that you're trying to bring in, make sure that they're getting proper light, since it's going to be a big transition for them. Also, make sure if you have any plants by windows, you make sure that they are not by the windows at night, because those temperatures are going to get really cold.
Mm, okay. And Daria?
I would say watch the watering. I know we're tempted to water, but photosynthesis slows down in houseplants during the winter, so they may not need as much moisture. Also, the humidity is going to be affected too, so they might struggle a little bit because that's changing as well.
Mm-hmm. And in the last 30 seconds or less, best gardening hack you've discovered, Daria?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll just go with what I always say. It's not a hack, but right plant, right place. That is still the mantra, and that will save you so much headache from anything from pests and diseases to right plants.
Okay. And Eliza?
You can grow just about any leafy green in a container on your balcony.
Oh, okay. Eliza Passereau is Field Specialist in Horticulture at University of Missouri Extension St. Louis County Office, and Daria McHalvey is Supervisor of Home Gardening Information and Outreach at Missouri Botanical Garden. Eliza and Daria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.